Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the weekly episode of The Rut. Thank you for listening and downloading us. Thank you especially because last week our figures were enormous. It's amazing because Barnsley was on. It usually plummets when Barnsley's on there. But so thank you very much indeed. It's been an amazing weekend of rugby, European rugby. We now know the quarterfinalists in both the major competitions. There was just some fantastic stuff. It's also less than a fortnight till the Six Nations, probably one of the most eagerly awaited Six Nations and most competitive that there's been for years. And on the weekend, another brilliant effort by the media when Owen Farrell missed a game because he had a tiny bruise on his left fingernail. The media rallied to the cause, and we had it being a dynamic, horrible injury which could cost England the Triple Crown and the Grand Slam in about 5 minutes. So that was brilliant overreaction by the boys. I don't think Owen's got any problem at all. We've got a great panel today, even better than last week because Barnsley's not here. Nick Easter was one of the heroes of the era at Twickenham. Absolutely adored by the public. Played nearly 300 games for Harlequins and over 50 for England. Nick, does it feel like sometimes you played nearly 300 games for Harlequins?
It does, yeah, especially when you're getting up in the morning. But I've learned to deal with it now. Thanks, Stephen. What a generous introduction that was.
Also, a couple of things have happened since Nick was last with us. First of all, there's the arrival of a new Easter, Jacob Easter. And Nick has been telling us before we came on there all the ruses he uses not to look after Jacob and make sure his missus does. But
only in the nocturnally.
Okay.
I'm absolutely adoring the daytimes with him.
Okay, fine. Okay, well, he stepped in.
Picky and choosing.
Stepped in on the loose ball pretty quickly there. Also, amazingly, in my opinion, and Nick's, I'm sure, he leaves fairly soon to take up a post coaching the Sharks in Super Rugby. Nick, you've already got the Curry Cup off Pat because you helped take the boys to victory in that. But Super Rugby, what an amazing opportunity.
Yeah, fantastic. Left Quins in the summer and went off and did the Curry Cup, as you mentioned. And I just think from a coaching perspective, general rugby perspective, you know, to experience, you know, their top competition over there, you know, going on tour to Argentina, Australia, New Zealand, you know, to Singapore, as well as obviously the home games, and just to get involved in the culture, the sort of philosophy, the understanding of what rugby means, and clearly, obviously, the competition, because it is played a little bit differently. You know, we know it's fast and loose over there, it's refereed a little bit differently, and I think all those nuances and that experience, you know, will stand me in good stead in my coaching career, but also from a life perspective. You know, we're sort of trading. Look, I live in Southfields in southwest London, absolutely love it. You know, not far from Wimbledon Common and the Wombles and everything, but to have a sort of nice four-bed house on a clifftop overlooking the beach, where I don't think they see a winter day or a day drop below sort of 20 or 18 degrees Celsius. Be a very enjoyable time for me and the family for 6 months.
Well, there's no need to rub it in. I just ask you what it's like coaching Super Rugby, that's all. Secondly, we've got Nigel Botherway, long-time rugby columnist, reporter with the Sunday Times, high-level rugby coach, as I keep on embarrassing him by saying, rower and a cyclist. And I think one of the things we never mentioned before is that you've got age awards at the Tour de France Senior Championships. You've actually won a stage of the Tour de France in the seniors.
I have in my dreams. No, those reports are slightly exaggerated. I've ridden lots of stages of the Tour de France and I've won gold medals in my age group, but that's for the times rather than winning the stage. And right. I always set the target to get the gold medal for the age group below me. But
okay. All right, he's still a little bit out of my league, mate. He's also most famous as in his role as the Cod Father. Nige is the host of Fisherman's Blues, which is TalkSport's weekly fishing programme. He's been on it for ages. And massively popular, Cod Father.
Yes, it is.
Almost as big as Chris Evans. Also, is it true recently, could you comment on this, that you did catch an absolutely key fish? You may not want to talk about it because I know it's private. But did you not catch a gigantic fish somewhere that you're not really supposed to talk about?
I did, that's right. I'm not really supposed to talk about okay, it, but it's true. I did. Most fishermen pretend, you know, exaggerate what they've caught, but others play it down. But something I mentioned to you off-air last time we were in, I thought as a Welshman you would know, that Gareth Edwards, most people know he's a very keen trout and salmon angler, but Gareth Edwards for quite a long time held the British pike record with a 45-pound pike. How's that?
Bloody unbelievable. How big is that? 45 pounds.
About that big, yeah. 45 pounds, 6, almost a sack of potatoes. And I know Saracens used to have a fishing club. Richard Hill, really keen angler, and you probably know Nick Evans.
Yeah,
mad
loves
keen
it.
On his fishing. Snapper, he absolutely loves it. Yeah, likes his predator fishing.
Okay, you've avoided the answer, but that's about the key fish. That's fine. We've also got only Simon Halliday, who is only the chairman of European Professional Club Rugby, the body which runs both European competitions, and is doing so, if I may say so, Simon, increasingly successfully. And you've put the number of top outstanding rugby officials in the world. You've boosted the numbers from 1 to 2. So well done. Weekend, you must have been delighted?
Oh, absolutely delighted. I think both competitions, it's unprecedented. Level of performance was incredible, whatever was riding on whichever match you happened to see. So, yeah, couldn't be happier. And the quarterfinals are just eye-watering in both competitions. So I'm very conscious, by the way, that I'm following on from Barnsley. Mm-hmm. We both studied at university together simultaneously, but I've got obviously an intellectual challenge to keep up with the Barnes standards.
I wouldn't say that, but okay, fair enough.
I didn't say what sort of challenge.
And Simon, incidentally, remains, I insist that this is still my opinion, part of the greatest centre partnership I've seen playing the game. People talk about Walter Little and Frank Bunce, etc., whoever they may be, but Halliday and Guscott, admittedly playing outside Barnsley, still got something to surpass. And I don't want tickets for the final. That's not why I'm saying that. Simon, the weekend, this is the first time where we're under new regulations where if you win the top, come out top in the pool, you could possibly stay at home till the very end of the tournament. So Saracens, for instance, may well, if they carry on, may well not play at home. There's no draw for the semi-final.
Yeah, and it's, you know, what we're trying to do is make sure that, you know, we're reflecting the performance, you know, in every game. So ultimately, you can't relax, and you know, you're getting genuinely the best all-round team going through the system. Yeah, it's always up for debate, you know, home and away, and it, in Europe it really matters because you know home advantage is huge, as you're seeing week in week out. So yeah, I mean the best teams will win the tournament, and you know Racing and Leinster and Saracens seem to have the form, but you know people are there by right, and there's a big weekend up in Edinburgh by the looks of it, isn't there? Which you know, Mr. Cockerell's going to be making loads of.
Nick, there's no English clubs don't have unlimited resources, but in an era where there's promotion and relegation and an incredibly competitive league, as opposed to the Pro 14 where there's no relegation, the onus is very much on the English clubs and the players to you know put their shoulders to the wheel or more. Did you found it difficult in your playing career to concentrate on both competitions? Because someone like Munster, they don't have to field the first team now almost until they come out in the quarter final.
Well, you're right there. I was actually doing a bit of fact finding down at Munster on Monday and Tuesday last week. You know, very generous of them to sort of let me in behind sort of closed doors. And we all know it, but the biggest thing that strikes me is they're playing, you know, they just played Gloucester, who had 17 injuries, I think, on the Friday night, or 17 squad injuries, probably not first team. And I sort of asked Johan van Graam, I said, have you got a full squad to pick from? Yeah. You know, yes, he does have a full squad to pick from. And I'll just be interested. I know Saracens had a few boys back, you know, the Vunapolas and Mario Itoje, but how rarely that happens. And we do know that, you know, that's a bit of an issue. To answer your question, no, we loved it. And the funny thing was, us, you know, at Harlequins, I think, you know, we pushed probably at the, you know, the brink of the salary cap, or might have been just below it throughout my time with Dino and Connor there. But it was just a reflection of actually how well you were playing generally in the season. I remember we had that fantastic run. Unfortunately, you know, Bloodgate happened in 1 year, but we were second in the league and we flew through. The same happened, I think, in 2012, 2013. We reached the quarterfinals. We didn't get any further, and probably fighting on two fronts by the end of that season might have been a bit much for the squad size we had. But in terms of, you know, whenever the tournament approached, you know, there was a buzz in the air. It was exciting. It wasn't, right, this is just another game, like the Premiership had been. You know, you did have an eye on when these European games were occurring.
Now, Jim, we always trying to sell rugby to our bosses, because we love their football. Okay, well, as we all love our football too, but does the European event, you know, like we can remember a time when there wasn't one, but does the European event still have the same appeal to you? Is it rising in appeal for you? Is it more interesting? Or do you have reservations about it in any way?
My slight reservation, and I was going to ask Nick and Simon what they thought. You know, you sometimes get the impression with the Premiership, it's becoming a bit like football with the Champions League. Like, teams spend so much time qualifying, yet then in danger of never actually winning anything. What do you boys think to that?
Yeah, I understand that. I think it, you know, I get asked the question all the time, you know, when the Irish didn't do very well a few years ago, is this an Anglo-French competition? Well, you know, will the Welsh ever do anything? Scotland are never going to do anything. And it's cyclical. I think every domestic league has to operate in its own environment, and there's no point trying to compare one to the other, because you have promotion relegation in Premiership, you don't in Pro 14. You do in Top 14, but frankly it's pretty technical, because they're always the same teams that go up or down.
Yeah.
The big teams never go down, whereas this year a big team will go down from the Premiership who've got internationals, stadia facilities, multi-million pounds things that you don't have that in France. So it's wherever you look, it's different. I think it's still aspirational. I think, you know, what do you want to achieve? You know, some teams will have their ambitions capped. You can't actually recreate it. But the fact is that to be the best in Europe now, you really have to have depth. You have to have resource. And if you don't have it, you know, you do what Newcastle did. Two incredible wins. They've got so many injuries, they've got no option but to scale back and think, right,
that's right,
to concentrate on survival. There's not much you can do about that.
It's great for the fans though, Steve, isn't it? You know, when you see, you know, Leicester fans or whoever who've been up and down the country, played everywhere in the Premiership, and when you, if you know, if you meet them for a coffee, you bump into them in a bar, the places, you know, you get couples who've been all over Europe, had fantastic weekends. In that respect, it's brilliant, isn't it?
I think it is, but the thing is as well, I think that the old focus on going with the Six Nations, because Six Nations is so truncated now, you can't go leave your family twice in 3 weeks sort of thing like you used to. But Simon, you've brought in the concept of moving the final around, but it's clear now that actually loads of people are following the final, not necessarily with their team in it. There's just a huge groundswell of people just following the competition.
When I first got involved, along with Vincent Gaillard, we looked, and the organisation was looking at trying to do things a bit differently, not just going around the old national stadia, which was becoming quite sort of old school, really. So, and last year, for the first time, we went outside the core Six Nations, went to Bilbao, and it was a clear sellout, and we're already sold out in Newcastle, which makes us, you know, obviously a little bit regretful that we haven't got a bigger stadium, but that's just testament to the popularity. It's destination rugby, and we're being told the fan village is expecting up to 20,000 people along the banks of the River Tyne, you know, in the area we've designated. It's just going to be a huge party. So we need to keep that going, but we need to be aware that the popularity is growing. So we're going to have to push up our thoughts on stadia. It's Marseille the year after, which is mid-60s, thousands, which, you know, is another step up from Newcastle. And we haven't decided after that, but, you know, we've got to keep that going, because it's a wonderful, wonderful kind of match experience, which everyone wants.
Just speaking for myself, I'm so glad you got off that little circle of Cardiff, Twickenham, Murrayfield, Dublin, because that stopped working. Nick, let's go back to the weekend's action. You saw a couple of the games. Munster and Exeter, You must have expected that sort of contest because you spent time with them, but what an absolutely ferocious thing it was.
It was a proper test match, wasn't it? Yeah, you watch the first 3 minutes and them hammering into the breakdowns, and now you think, this can't last, this can't last. And boy, it did. Nothing between the teams, really. You know, the interesting thing I think Exeter will take from it is, you know, I know there's the Exeter way in terms of kicking for the corner is, you know, when you get to these sort of knockout stages, you know, scoreboard pressure, you know, knocking over, no guarantee you're going to knock over the kick, of course. But I think they were terrific. Could have gone either way. There's nothing to separate both sides, and one of them had to go through. And I think, you know, if you're going to give the small percentages to Munster, it's clearly about how you manage your squad, is what we've already touched on. And, you know, Exeter, they're the sort of side you'd back amongst anyone to go away from home somewhere in Toneman Park and get a result.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Boy, they were very close.
Nigel, was it eventually that Exeter started really badly, but is it not a lesson that you've got to be off the mark? Because actually, their poorest performance of the season probably was at home against Munster in the first game.
That's right. Now you've got to take, and again, that's another thing I was thinking about asking Nick, because Exeter have got this fantastic catch and drive that they rely on for, you know, so many of their points, and it makes me think, you know, I always think the difference between a ruck and a maul, a ruck you don't go forward, and it makes me wonder why they don't maul a bit more around the pitch to get, you know, to get some really good go forward, you know, just to be a bit different.
Yeah, the mauls, it's come back a little bit this year, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the last few years just been devalued because, you know, quite frankly, I don't think referees like refereeing it.
Yeah.
So they allow these people to swim up the side, which I just think is ridiculous and makes, you know, it makes it even more messy. And collapse because they don't really like refereeing. It's tough. It's tough to referee, you know, refereeing both sides.
Yeah, sure.
You know, you're looking at what's going on aerially, then when they come down, then as it evolves and everything like that. It's tough, you know, they definitely need help.
But some guy comes around and, providing he doesn't change his grip.
Yeah, doesn't change his bind, but then they do change their bind because then they bind onto the ball.
Yeah. Of course
it's like, well, he's changed his bind
therefore,
and locked the ball up.
I can see wrestling, but if you were coaching Exeter, for instance, you have a few more mauls, you suck them in if you want to go wide, or you've got more chance of getting a penalty, haven't you?
Yeah, I think they did go with that,
yeah.
Because they score a lot of their pick and go in their mauls where they score all their tries, isn't it? Certainly this year, a lot more of them. I think Munster put decent pressure on their line out. There's a few not straights towards the end, a few stolen. You know, there's one obviously 5 yards out, wasn't there, that was stolen when Billy Holland, the substitute, came on. Look, tight game, could have gone either way. Maybe take your points next time, but look, that's not to say that the result would have been any different.
Can I give you a little solution? All these rucks and mauls, just get the ball back, get it out to the backs and play.
Okay.
Otherwise, you know, I lived in an era where Dean Richards used to maul the ball and used to disappear up his jumper. And, you know, that wasn't the reason we won Grand Slams, by the way, but because the back's got the ball with a bit of space. Come on.
Something else on that, Simon, that you might agree with. Barnsley mentioned it in the paper a few weeks ago, and I was going to ask you this, Nick, again. I wonder, from a safety point of view, to stop the frustration of fans and quicker ball, what would happen if you banned jackaling?
Well, I think you just take away the essence of rugby, to be honest, Nigel, because rugby union, not rugby league, rugby union is about a contest for possession.
Yeah.
That's what's so wonderful about it. You know.
But wouldn't the contest be like an old-fashioned ruck trying to drive over?
Well, that's changing the rucking laws.
Yeah,
But you're not allowed to, you know, you're not allowed to handle the ball on the ground, are you?
No.
So whether they brought something like that in.
No, I just think if you stayed on your, that guy was the jackler, if he stayed on his feet and drove over like you used to.
Well, they can do that. That's an option for guys that aren't good at staying strong over the ball like that. They find themselves off balance. You know, I coach out of the breakdown. What are your strengths? If you're not great in that position, go straight through, take the first guy away.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a different debate now, isn't it, about the safety around the ruck. But generally, everyone's a much better at doing, you know, that poaching, jackling job now.
I'm just going to check with the producer if Nigel is allowed to take over the show like this. Is that a thumbs up or down? Simon, I know you've got to wear, you can't wear your English hat because when you're chairman, but there's been great talk about the bad performances of the English and it's not, England not going to do anything this year. If you saw Saracens on Saturday and you were betting against an England team, you would have been very worried by Sunday. Because I thought they were superb.
Yeah, they were. I saw that game. It was an outstanding game of rugby for a start. I mean, the Glasgow actually were a few men short, but they
really had a go at them, didn't
really
they?
Really had a go, and Saracens had to dig deep to win that game, whatever the scoreline. So I agree. I mean, I said it before that I've travelled out to Ireland actually to meet the provinces in the Irish Rugby Union when they had no teams in the last four. The English had five in the last eight, didn't they? Mm. And there were no Irish teams. And I said, have we got a problem here? You know, apparently we have. And they just fixed me with a steely glare and said, give us 12 months. Mm. And at the time I said, look, rugby people understand. Things go in peaks and troughs and cycles. And you can get a couple of bad years. So back they came, and look at them now. Mm. And I think the same for England. Will recalibrate. The clubs will take a look at it. And, you know, it's fine margins. You talk about Exeter. You know, Bath and Wasps have had terrible injury scares, and Leicester have been way off beam. But you don't think that's going to happen forever, do you?
No.
And in the meantime, as you say, Saracens is probably the team to beat. So if they win the Heineken Champions Cup and a cluster of really strong English sides contesting the Challenge Cup could clear that. They'll have to beat Clermont first, but if they do, suddenly you've got two English winners and who's complaining? So I think we'll just be a bit careful, a bit premature at this point.
Nick, I mean, I know Quins were part of a very, very competitive club. Was it sort of irksome when someone like Saracens suddenly appear with massive budgets and a different sort of club to everybody else and sort of come through to the top?
There was no love loss for a while between us. And we had Connor at the helm for a majority of the time there, and they had Brendan Fenter, who were, you know, partnered up together, I think, their early sort of head coach role at London Irish. So, and they had very different philosophies of playing. So did both clubs. I think that was part of it as well. It is what it is at the end of the day. And I think the more you start looking for excuses and feeling the victim, the less successful you're going to be. And actually you just take the eye off, you know, what you're trying to do and sort of make progress, improve as a rugby player, as a team as well, and try and get some success.
Well
and
said.
It's just, you know, and look, they do things differently. I think that's great. You know, what I'm concerned about in the game at the moment, my deep concern from a playing perspective, is everyone playing the same way. You know, everyone having the same sort of system in attack, same system in defence, same area that they decide to run a maul or run a peel out of a maul and everything. And what I really enjoyed about 3 years ago when I first became defence coach at Quins is analysing the Premiership and how, and feeding back to the players and having the players involved, is there was different nuances to each team. And the next year, it's all like, well, actually, they run roughly the same as what we've just analysed for the last 4 weeks, but he's the danger man, yada, 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 and what have you. I think that's my biggest concern, is teams not losing identity, but the identity just being wholesome throughout.
Nigel, isn't every team like it's like a clone of each other now?
Yeah, I agree. And again, yeah, Simon being here, I often think, I remember when Brian Ashton became the England coach, yeah, everybody was playing very similar. And I remember saying to Brian Ashton, some of those old moves you used to do at Bath, there'd be generations of players now who've never defended anything like that. And I know I'm sounding a bit of an old fogey here, but I said, well, you could run one of those moves and score a try, you know, at Twickenham against France, and likewise in the Premiership.
Well, you don't want to reinvent the wheel too much. I mean, you know, rugby's always been had the same aspects to it, whether it be 50 years ago or today. You know, just because you train every day doesn't make you more inspirational as a player. And you know, the surprise when people kind of celebrate the offloads, it always makes me smile, because I used to call it passing out of the tackle, which is one of those things that you try and do every time you moved into contact. But apparently that's now something revolutionary. Well, look at the videos. And, you know, Racing 92, for me, they're unbelievable because they do everything. We talk about clones and sameness. There's nothing samey about Racing. They go into every single contact looking to offload it, because they know that two out of three, they'll do it. And if they do, they'll score tries.
Toulouse are bringing that back into their game, because that was obviously what they were.
Leinster can play it either way, as Di Young said at the weekend. So don't start thinking Leinster is a sort of a one-trick pony. They can do everything.
No, but look, Nick's point, which I do agree with. Nick, are we talking about a sort of lack of inspiration in coaching there? Because if I was a brilliant coach, I'd be looking for things like, this is all so samey, but now I'm going to do this because I'm going to put my team ahead, because I'm going to do it different to anybody else.
That's what you're always thinking. You want to be innovative, you want to be ahead of the curve, you don't want to be following. But you've got to be very careful when you do that, because too much change, you're always working with the lowest common denominator. And you know, and there's a lot of them actually in a squad of 45-50. You know, the top players will get it straight away, but if there's other people not on the same page with 15 on the field, it breaks down. And you know, Simon touched on it, rugby's always, you know, it's the basics. Just doing the basics really, really well wins you games. But within that, you've got to have certain plays or tricks up your sleeve, or make them think, you know, a bit unpredictable. Make them think about that. Right, put them out of their comfort zone. They've got to change something. Then we can play how we usually play, or something along those lines. You are thinking about that as a coach, but it's managing that time week on week, and when you get it in, you know, amongst all the other stuff you've got to do.
Let's just carry on talking about the quarterfinals of the cup of the Champions Cup. Saracens played absolutely brilliantly. I'll just mention one guy. I mean, in the media, we are obsessed by certain people, like Johnny Wilkinson, Danny Cipriani, etc. And Mario Tozzi is one of them, that he doesn't have to do anything to become the headline news. I'd hold my hand up and say it, like Harry Kane at football. But I thought he was a being from another planet on Saturday, Tozzi. I thought he was doing stuff I'd just never seen before. And just makes me wonder how good he can be, Nige.
Now, I agree with you entirely, because when you see someone on the pitch, you never know if they're sticking to, you know, a game plan they've been given. Because if you just saw a Toji in a pair of shorts, you'd think, like, you know, I bet you were probably like at school, you give him the ball, he'd run from one end to the other and score. And when he plays for England, he does what he's supposed to do, wins the line out, scrummages, hits the rucks, hits the ball, and doesn't carry as much. And as a fan, when you're watching him, you think, give him the ball, yeah, let him run it. And he seems to be doing that more now, doesn't he?
Ever, you know, I've never been really on the Toji bandwagon particularly, but watching him on Saturday was exactly as you said, Steve. Everything he did turned to gold. I couldn't yeah. believe it. The pace of his tackling, he must have stripped four or five lineouts. You know, even dummied and went and shaped to kick and didn't. Yeah, I mean, yeah. What's going on here? You know, he was seriously out of this world. And that's probably the first time I would have said that. Not because I don't know he's a world-class player, because he is. But on that day, he was untouchable.
That's what he's really worked on, his ball in hand stuff. Right. He was always a destructive player. Boy, a great line-out forward, good over the ball, getting your face defensively. He's brought, you know, an element of ball playing or decision-making with the ball and carrying game. And I think that's what he's really, you know, been a focus from the England coaches, from the Saracens coaches, about adding it, because he's a tremendous athlete. I mean, I think the guy does pull-ups with 80 kilos.
That's right.
You know, he's already, I don't know, 120 or something like that. So he's pulling up 200 kilos.
Oh, don't.
In reps, I'm talking about. So he's an incredible athlete. And, you know, with the way the game's going, you know, you have to be a threat ball in hand. And
yeah.
Who better than a guy 6'5", 120 kilos?
Definitely not.
Just
outstanding.
Just talk about the semi-finals then, Nick. You're the Glasgow coach. You've just thrown everything in your armoury at Saracens. You got ahead, you played a great game, but in the end you still lost by 20 points. You've got to go down and do it again. What do you do this time? Anything different? Or is there any way you can...
Win your lineouts.
Yeah.
That's what I'd say. They played really well. Even in the second half, there's a few... Just game control.
Yeah,
I think they just got carried away a little bit in the second half, didn't they? Trying to force it a little bit, searching for that four tries. You know, you need to win your lineouts, and that's ultimately where I think they started to unravel a little bit. I mean, they had the attacking framework there with the nine running, you know, tying them in, spaces around there, which opened it up out wide. And Dave Rennie's a fantastic coach, you know, and he'll have a keen eye for detail on any sort of flaws in the defensive system. But if your foundations aren't there, rock solid against a team like Saracens, you know, they'll put a squeeze on you, and eventually, you know, they'll overrun you.
And of course, Nige, just to talk about quarterfinals briefly, with Owen Farrell back, that gives Saracens someone to say, look, he didn't play last time, and now we're adding something that gives them even more of sort of ironclad.
But as Simon said earlier, you know, Glasgow weren't at full strength either.
No.
I mean, obviously, Saris are going to be favourites, especially at home, but if Glasgow can get, you know, their forwards back, they've still got to win with a shout, haven't they?
Okay, there's no top competition, Simon. There's no great year unless there's a great French team. Now, Racing and Toulouse are playing in a quarter final, so there'll be at least one in the semi. But are either of those two... let's put it another way. Are they anywhere near the levels of, say, Leinster and Saracens, or are they getting there?
We're
talking about the way they play, which is fantastic.
But there are different stages of development, aren't there? I think in the round, Toulouse is the first season where they've really started to threaten, because they've got rid of the old guard and they've got some incredible good young players, and they're probably delighted to be where they are at the moment. They're doing really well in the top 14 as well, so that their attitude is really refreshing. Probably a bit early, given it takes time. You know, Racing have been to two finals and lost both, so you know they probably got that to do. They've got to get a bit of experience in the latter stages. I think Racing is ready. Leinster nullified them in the Bilbao final,
and won a tight game.
But Wrexham were well in it, though.
They were well in it.
And they had their top two and fly halves out.
Exactly. Yeah, so yeah. Pat Lammy got injured in the first 5 minutes with Carter not even starting.
Hmm.
If they start with people like Russell and Zeebo on the pitch and they stay fit, they can unravel anybody.
Okay.
And so I think it probably could be Racing's time, and Leinster will fear them, I think. But, you know, outside of that, of course, Toulouse, I think that the best French players within Toulouse and some of them within Racing, because obviously Racing is a very sort of cosmopolitan team, make me much more positive about France and their opportunity, even though they lost at home to Fiji. But, you know what, Fiji's going to beat someone in the World Cup, aren't they? I mean, with the players they've got, they're going to spring a surprise. So I'm actually quite bullish about French rugby.
There's one game, probably all four of them, is for, with the good of the tournament at stake. Because, Nigel, we've had so many podcasts over the years where we're saying, oh, blimey, Scotland are out of it, Scotland the bottom, then I've got a club in. Edinburgh at home to Munster, which is a hellish point on the journey, but is that not a seminal match for the future of Scottish rugby, leave alone Edinburgh? Yeah. If Edinburgh can get in the semi, it makes a lot of difference.
And I'm sure that Richard Cockerell's just the man. He'll be absolutely loving that. If there's anyone that can plot the downfall of Munster, it's going to be one up front, isn't it, Nick? Yeah. And Richard Cockerell is the man, and he's done a brilliant job there.
He's as you say, couldn't put it better. He has been fantastic. And he turned them around. They've got hard-nosed edge. He knows... Simon, unfortunately, games are won up front. He's got the hardened pack there.
They got some tidy backs as well, though.
They've got
they?
Some great backs, and you know, no shortage of talent. Have they? You know, Hamish Watson, Billy Matter.
Yeah,
I mean, phenomenal. And as you mentioned, a lot in the backs as well.
It's a great prospect. Quarterfinals. Really looking forward to it, and it's really nice that a body in rugby of officials has got themselves together, and instead of picking the easy option, they've done the difficult one. So well done. You're listening to The Ruck. We'll be back in a minute. Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online and on your smartphone or tablet. It's just £3 for 3 months in our January sale. Search The Times subscription for more information.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome back to The Ruck. I think we gave the European competitions good dusting down there. As I said at the start, less than 2 weeks before the Six Nations. Nick, you've had a time long enough out of the England team to be a bit more reflective about it. The Eddie Jones era, and maybe especially that your old mate at Quinns, Danny Kerr, has been left out. How have you seen the era from the distance for the first time? How have you seen the Eddie Jones era and the England team?
I think he'll be, you know, really happy with where he's at, to be perfectly honest. You know, clearly started off like a steamroller, early success on tour, Grand Slam, then the Six Nations followed. And he was probably not aware that sides were catching him up. You know, he got him fit. He gave him a clear game plan. You know, very, very direct, physical. Billy Vunipola was a big part of that as well. It was no secret when he got injured, his performances sort of dropped off. But last year, you know, he found out a little bit more. You know, a lot of the rest of the world sort of caught up, overtook them briefly. But he's actually, I think he's happened upon in the autumn. Now, I know the pack's going to be different. But he happened upon a real workmanlike, no egos type of pack, you know, throughout that autumn series. You know, had to bring these guys in. You know, Ben Moon, I thought, was fantastic. Down next to Mark Wilson. You know, Sam Undell, I know he's injured for the Six Nations. And I think finally, despite a number of discussions, especially from you guys around the table and the columns you write and everything, we realise that to win a World Cup, you need to be good at the breakdown. You need a breakdown specialist, at least one of them, in the back row. You look throughout, you know, Michael Jones, you know, David Wilson, our very own Neil back, Richie McCaw obviously twice.
Yeah.
You know, Simon Poidevin back in the day. Every single side, you know, Dusatoir in the final in 2011, Pocock and Hooper in the final last time. It's like it's staring you in the face how important game is. And he's now got it. You know, Tom Curry, Underhill, Wilson, guys there that made a huge difference. You know, they're playing South Africa. Everyone thought, oh, Malcolm Arts is going to make four or five turnovers. Didn't see him at all. The All Blacks wasn't a problem at the breakdown. Okay. And two excellent breakdown sides. And I think he's realised how important that area is instead of going with the six and a halves and let's make everyone big ball carriers because you've got to be good on the floor. But to come back to your point, I think it's bubbling nicely. You find out a lot more about yourself in defeat and adversity. He's had that year. I don't think they'll win the Six Nations. I think going away to Wales and Ireland will be a little bit too much. I don't think there'll be a Grand Slam winner anyway. I know you're going to ask that question probably later. But I think the timing's perfect in terms of getting his big men back. Tua Lange's actually, I think he might actually play for the first time under Eddie Jones or start a game for the first time under Eddie Jones. I think it's the timing is crucial at the moment.
Simon, we'll come to you in a second about that. So the back play, the team from 9 to 15. But Nigel, do you share the optimism?
Yeah, I do, Nick's optimism. I think Ed is in a great place because we've played so much without some of the players he would start with, you know, like Billy Vunipola and, of course, Tua Lange. And I think the results he's had secretly, you can look at, you know, you can sit at home and you can say to yourself, when I get those boys back, we build on that. And you don't want to peak too soon. I mean, we were fantastic that tour in Australia. But yeah, I always think to win the World Cup, you need the best team in the world for about 3 weeks, don't you? It's no good being the best team, you know, 2 years out. I think we're in a good place.
Well, what about the only time that England have ever won it? Clive Woodward said, I want to go into the tournament as number one ranked team, which he did. He took the rest of the world to the cleaners. They were so confident when they got there. I remember saying, thinking before the World Cup and writing, England are going to win this. Isn't that not better than going in half soaked and having lost half your previous 10 games?
You'd prefer to be, and if we'd have gone in half soaked with a full strength side, then I'd be a bit more worried, wouldn't you, Nick? But okay. When you've got so many good players coming back, I think you've got reasons to be cheerful. So,
Simon, let's talk about England's midfield. I mean, they've had almost one combination per match in the last 5 years. When it all shakes down, as Nick says, Tua Lange's now back and he's available to play, whether or not they pick him or not. Where would you see Eddie going in 10, 12, 13 for a start?
Yeah, it's a tough one because you haven't seen enough combinations for long enough to be able to see what really genuinely works. But I've always believed you need mix. And so first of all, I think they've worked out Farrell should be 10. And I've thought that for a while, that you should pick him at 10, not at 12. And if you do that, then I think people are obsessed with inside outside. Just play two guys who complement each other, and then they can work it out, you know, left and right, if you like. So I would have Slade. I think he's earned the right. He needs to get more ball, and he doesn't often get it in the spaces where he can do some damage. And then either Tio or Tua Lange. I don't think you play the two of them together. I genuinely don't. There's just no point. There's not enough mix between them. As a defender, you need to look in front of you and think, I'm not quite sure what that guy's going to do. Or I'm not quite sure what patterns he's going to run. You need to create uncertainty in defence. There's no uncertainty if you've got Tio and Tua Lange together. You know exactly what they're going to do. Run straight at you. So I think that's his number one midfield now. It could have been something else another time, but we don't have any time. I think those are the three players he should focus on.
Nick, Dick, if you've been a regular with England over the last couple of years, as a forward, especially number eight, don't you just beg for the day when you know who your 10's going to be and you know he's going to be your 10 for the season and you can play with him? It must be very difficult to switch in any position when your 10's always changing.
Well, of course it is. I mean, he's your quarterback, isn't he? And it speaks for itself because he drives the team, he calls the plays, he's got a certain area of strength compared to another 10 possibly, and your game plan revolves around that a majority of the time. Not all the time, but a majority of your game plan will revolve around the strengths of your number 10. And I fully agree with Simon. You know, that's who my midfield would be. Play your best players in your best position, please. You know, Mario Tozzi, not in the back row. You know, he's a second row. We've got strong second rows. Utilise that. We've got fantastic back rows. And Owen Farrell at 10. And certainly against Ireland, Mike Brown at fullback, please, as well.
Nige?
Yeah, I'd go along with that.
You go along with Brown, Farrell, Itoji in second row?
Yeah, and it's an interesting one. Again, Nick said it, and, you know, with Brownie, I feel sorry for Alex Goode, but he probably is the bloke against Ireland. Would you play him if you were playing the All Blacks in a World Cup final? Would he be your man, Nick?
Yeah, he would be my man. I mean, you know what a guy gives. His tenacity, his, his defence, his kicking game. He'll always break that first tackle. Look, we know there's some limitations in terms of the passing game and everything, but the guy is the ultimate competitor. The other thing is, Eddie's not stupid, right? Yeah. And he's done bloody well at World Cups. You know, he got to the final with probably not the best best team in the world when we won in 2003. He was a consultant in 2007 when they won. We know what he did with Japan. He's periodised and tactically periodised where he wants to be.
Yeah.
So that's another reason to be confident. But on that, he also knows you need a certain number of caps. So, you know, South Africa weren't the number one team in the world in 2007 and Australia in 1999 when they went into World Cup, unlike him in 2003. But they had a hell of a lot of experience and they knew what their team was.
Awesome.
And that back three without Mike Brown doesn't have that experience in terms of caps. I'm not saying it's not the best back three, but they don't have that experience in terms of caps.
Also, I don't know what they're like in South Africa, but I've said it before, like with Daly, you know, people, you know, we're probably guilty of it, so good at looking at what people can't do rather than look at what they can do, and they've got so many strengths.
Yeah, I'd agree on that point. I think we're slightly turning, though, to look more towards the positive, which is good.
Weekly award, God or Goddess of the Week. We'll start with you, Nigel. Who's absolutely overwhelmed you this week?
Well, he overwhelms me on a regular basis. I think he's such a skillful player. I covered a game at Saracens once where the ball got kicked ahead. It was bobbling horribly. And Alex Goode stubbed it with his toe. It came up on the full. He caught it and ran it back. And he's just such a skillful player. And I didn't realise, but I spoke to him afterwards. I said, did you do that on purpose? And he said, yes. And I found out he played for Ipswich Town as a schoolboy. And to stand in at fly half for Saris and steer them through to the quarterfinals, Alex Goode is my God of the Week.
God of the Week. Now, Simon?
Well, first of all, I'm not doing anything this weekend because I've had two long weekends of European rugby. So a bit of a time out.
What a jacker. We were all at rugby last week and this week.
I'm sorry about that.
Okay, pace, is it the pace in the committee room is a bit too much for you?
No, I've got some domestic stuff to do. I'm watching something.
All right.
I, perhaps slightly left field, and Nick will be a bit surprised, but I'm going to go for someone from the back row.
Right.
Because I think he's probably now the best flanker in the world, bar none. The man from Munster, Omoane. I just think he has turned himself into some sort of legend where I love the look on his face. It reminds me of some of the boys from Bath. When the boys from Bath in the back row got angry, we knew we were in a good place. And he has that. And I think if England can neutralise him, then they've got a good chance of winning in Dublin. But he's the key to so much. So that's my God of the Week.
Very good, very good, very good.
My God of the Week isn't a player, it's a coach of a Scottish team, Edinburgh. I think he's turned them around. Richard Cockerell, showing what a class operator he is. Even with that short stint at Toulon, we know what he did at Leicester. And he's now reaping the rewards, or they're getting the rewards and the benefit of his outstanding rugby mind and ethos. And he could possibly be a candidate, you never know, after the World Cup for the England job if he wants it. But, not getting ahead of ourselves, maybe Richard Cockerell.
Why not?
Okay.
And great to see England coaches
going to different places to ply their trade.
Absolutely.
Nick Easter going off to South Africa. You know, more England coaches should do that to gather more experience.
Absolutely. Mine would be Mauro Itoje, very difficult to get beyond him. I usually have Harry Kane, but Barnsley's told me not to have a Tottenham footballer this week, and he didn't play anyway. Nige, unlike Hallers, you still got some energy for rugby this weekend?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Although it's hard not to look ahead the following week in England-Ireland in Dublin. You know,
you've got to take one game at a time. Nick, where will you be rugby-wise this week?
Rugby-wise, I think I'm going to go down to my first coaching club, which is Wimbledon, in my last few years playing, and they've got a top-of-the-table clash down the road. So I think I might put myself down there, a few beers in the clubhouse, but, you know, bit of amateur
fantastic
stuff.
Hallers, we can pass by because you're going to have a week off. 2 weeks on the road has done you. Years ago, you could have done that.
It's six matches. It's not just 2 weeks. Europe is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Okay, all right.
But look, if there's an amateur, perhaps Isher are playing at home this weekend. Perhaps I'll go and watch them.
Okay. I'm going to football. There's no big rugby on, so I'm going to Middlesbrough against Newport in the FA Cup.
Oh my God!
This is my reporter. You can't say I'm not going to the war. I want to go to the war over there. I'm not going to Vietnam. I want the war to be in Paris.
Isn't that where Rory Underwood used to play? Didn't he play for Middlesbrough? Yes, he did.
I think he did, yeah.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. No, that was rugby, though, I think.
That's a long way away.
Yeah. No. You've got to get in the paper somehow. Thank you very much, guys. Nick, we just wish you all the very best. We'd love you to come back and hear about your experiences on Super Rugby, because, as Nigel said, that is a real major, major thing to do. And isn't it amazing how few people have gone and tried it?
Yeah.
Nice. Good luck with the next big one. And Simon, wish you a happy rest and more activity, and congratulations on the tournament so far. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with Owen.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan, and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts, and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.